Thank you very much, Dr. Mueller. It really is an honor and a privilege to be here. I'm pretty amazed, actually. For me, I have to tell you, I thought a lot about this speech, and I'm going to give you my speech, but I'm going to give you a personal revelation that I've had in the last couple months. You know, Bob Russell was a tremendous leader, and he really brought me to Christ. And I remember being a baby Christian, and I remember being so on fire, you know, just like, I think it was the most joyful period of my life, because my wife brought me to Southeast, and she wanted me to be a Christian, and, everything, I was president of KFC, and it all came together, and I was just so joyful, best time I've ever had in my life. I felt so high. And then I think as a Christian, you go through your spiritual highs and lows. You go through your growth. You go through those periods where you have your wonders and you come back. But I can only tell you that I think what's happened to me in the last couple months is it's been a spiritual renewal. And I think for some reason, I'm here today. And I think it's to go public even more on what kind of leader I need to be to represent Jesus Christ. And share whatever wisdom that I have that I can give to you that can help you be the best possible leader. And I think one of the great things about going public, it's like baptism. It makes it very hard for you to go back. You know, once you're out there and you stick your neck out, it's harder for you to go back. And I think that God really has me here tonight or today. I'm obviously a little nervous because I do know it's the morning, not the day, okay? I think he's put me here today to have even more of a renewal, go even more public so I can be an even better person, a better Christian, and really glorify him as I go into, you know, my last set of my life, which I hope is a very, very long, long time. So I'm truly humbled to be here. And, you know, one of the things I think that a leader has to do is to cast a shadow of leadership. Because what happens in organizations, what happens in churches, what happens in any place where people come together is people do what the leader does. People follow the leader. And so as a leader, one of the things I think you need to do is that people get picked up when they have lots of energy and there's a positive spirit. So I think one of my jobs is to create positive energy wherever I go. So one of the ways how I do it is I do a yum cheer, and I do it everywhere I speak. I have people stand up and do a yum cheer, and we're going to do it in this holy place today, okay? So I want you all on your feet, and you're going to help me out. I think you can figure this out, okay? You're all pretty smart. You know, it's very easy. It's like, give me a Y, give me a U, give me an M. What's that spell? Yum. What's that spell? What's that spell? Yum. You got it. All right? Okay. All right. Give me a Y. Give me a U. Give me an M. What's that spell? What's that spell? What's that spell? All right. You're good. Okay, great. Well, you know, I've been giving a lot of speeches to a lot of companies in the past year and a half, and I spoke to the AT&T Global Management Conference, and I taught them the AT&T cheer. I didn't know what to do with the ampersand. I didn't know how to do that one, so I just made them jump, okay? And then I presented to Caterpillar, and I want you to know you should all go out and buy their stock because everybody in that organization knows how to spell cat now, okay? So that's great. But no matter what I do, wherever I go, when I do a yum cheer, people love it. People love to have fun. People love positive energy. And I think as you build your church and you go out and you show people what God is all about, representing that and representing the energy that it can convey and the spirit and that you can have fun and you can be a Christian and have fun. Most people don't think that's possible. And you need to convey that positive energy as you go out in the world. Now, when you think of shadow leadership, I think it's particularly relevant for all of us Christians and particularly relevant for all of you who are going to go out and bring people to the Lord. You need to cast the shadow of leadership, and you need to cast the shadow of leadership of the greatest leader of all time, and that's Jesus Christ. Now, Paul said, imitate me as I imitate Christ. You know, just think of the power of that invitation. That's a powerful invitation, and I pray that I can live that. Because every time I really ask myself, what would Jesus do in this particular situation, I always make a good decision. I always make a much better decision than I would have if I didn't put God in the center of how I act and the decisions that I make. And I have to tell you, being a leader and having the privilege to lead the company that I lead is an unbelievable privilege. To me, it is really a gift from God. And it's literally unexplainable. I can't explain to you how it really happened. You know, just to digress for a minute, you know, my dad is a government surveyor. They were from Meadville, Missouri, and Haddam, Kansas. I lived in 23 states by the time I was in seventh grade. The biggest house that I ever lived in until I got in junior high was 8 foot wide by 40 feet long. And we would move from neighborhood or small town to small town. Now when my family gets together at Christmas and, you know, my sisters are with me, my mom and dad are with me, I don't care how big the house is, we're all sitting on each other's laps on the same sofa, okay? Because that's how we grew up. You know, we were a close-knit family, and, you know, I was the first kid to go off and get a college education. My dad, that's what my mom and dad lived for, that idea of me getting a college education. I still remember when we got our first permanent location in Kansas City, Missouri, my dad getting out his little safety deposit box and counting the government bonds that he could put down on the first down payment of our house. And here I am today, you know, here talking to you as the CEO of one of the largest companies in the world. I can't explain it. All I know is that God has just kept putting me in places that's given me an opportunity to do things. And for some reason, you know, I've had the great favor to be in a position of leadership. And believe me, I believe this is a real gift. And I think anytime you're a leader of any organization, it's a privilege of leadership. And I talk about the privilege of leadership all the time. So what I try to do when I go to work is to have an attitude of gratitude. You know, I'm always make my best decisions when I start out my day being thankful to God for all the blessings that He's bestowed on me. You know, one of the things we teach in our company is we try to teach people self-awareness. We try to make people aware of their moods and how they feel and how they really affect others. So one of the exercises we have is we call it the mood elevator exercise, where we make people aware of their moods. The worst decisions you can ever make is when you're at the bottom of the elevator, and that's when you're angry and revengeful. So anytime you're angry and revengeful, please be nice and don't make a decision, okay? What you want to do is keep moving up the mood elevator, and you at least want to get to the stage of where you're curious and interested. And then the highest part of the mood elevator is when you're grateful, when you have an attitude of gratitude, and that's when you have the perspective and the depth of the wisdom that I think God brings to all of us to make the very best possible decisions. So I try to start out each day, and I don't do it every day, but I try to start out each day really counting my blessings and thinking about how privileged I am and how blessed I've been, so that I go to work every single day with an attitude of being a servant leader. Now I know all of you are destined to be servant leaders. And you all have big goals. You have big goals for what you can achieve in your life. And when you think about your goals and the objectives that you set for yourself, why you're here today, when you think about what you want to get done and what you want to achieve on behalf of the Lord, how many of you can get it done by yourself? I don't see anybody raising their hand. I don't see anybody saying, I can get it done by myself. The fact of the matter is that you've got to take people with you to get it done. And I've just launched a book on this very subject, and it's based on a leadership program that I've taught the past 15 years called Taking People With You. Now, let me tell you a little bit about how this got started. When I was working at PepsiCo, I was running KFC and Pizza Hut. I was the president of KFC and Pizza Hut. And I got this phone call from Roger Enrico, who was the chairman of PepsiCo. And he said, David, you seem to have a pretty good track record for building teams and taking people with you and getting results. I'd like you to develop a leadership program that you can teach our top executives. And I was really honored to get this phone call from Roger Enrico, because he was a tough taskmaster, and for him to say I was pretty good at anything made me feel pretty good. And so I went about and I developed this program, and I was ready to give it. And then in 1996, yeah, I got this phone call from Roger Enrico in the fall. He said, David, I want you to know that we've decided to spin off the restaurants. Well, I didn't even know what a spinoff was, but it basically meant that PepsiCo was going to basically give Pizza Hut and Taco Bell and KFC, make it a separate company on the New York Stock Exchange, and we would run our company as a restaurant company, and they would focus on running the packaged goods company, which is Pepsi and Frito-Lay. And he felt that we would be much more successful as a focused restaurant company, and they'd be more successful as a packaged goods company. So I really didn't know what it meant, but I decided I better learn about it. But one of the things I did know is, like, in 2 weeks, I was scheduled to give my first leadership seminar to a group of PepsiCo executives, and they were all from Frito-Lay and Pepsi. And I wasn't going to be working with them. So I canceled the program, and I basically put the program in my files and said, man, I might come back to it someday. One of the great things that happened to me in my life is there was a great leader that I had the opportunity to work with when our company was founded, and his name was Andy Pearson. He used to work as the president of PepsiCo, and he also was a Harvard Business School professor, and he was an amazing guy. He was my best friend when he died. When he was 80 years old, my very best friend. And one of the things he did is he just showed me everything that he had learned over the years and introduced me to all kinds of people. So he calls me up and he says, hey, David, how'd you like to go and spend a little time with Jack Welch? He says, we're just getting ready to go public as a new company. He said, we can go up to his office and talk to him. I said, well, Andy, I'm a little busy. I really, really don't have time to do that. Just kidding, everybody, okay? So I said, absolutely. So I go up to Jack Welch's office, and we have lunch, and I take my notepad, and I ask him every question in the world, Mr. Welch this, Mr. Welch that. You know, by the end of the lunch, it was Jack, we were on a first-name basis. And I say, hey, what would you do if you were me? We're about ready to go start this company. What would you do? And he said, when I first got the GE job, he said, I went out and I immediately started cutting costs and reducing the bureaucracy of the company and making all these decisions to make us leaner and meaner. And I was doing it for a reason. I wanted us to be a growth company. I wanted us to create more opportunities for more people. I felt like we had to get more lean so we could get even bigger as we would go down the line. But I didn't tell anybody what I was doing, why I was doing it. I just started doing it. I didn't ask for any input, and all of a sudden, I got this reputation that took me a long time to shed, and I was called Neutron Jack, because I was just blowing up GE. And he said, if there was anything that I could do going back over again, I would have gone out and I would have found a way to talk to my people, let them know what I was thinking. Just as importantly, get their ideas. Tell them what kind of work environment we wanted to create. And then we would start moving forward together. So I'd find some way to do that if I were you. Well, I went home, and I was flying on my way home, and I thought about this leadership program I put together. So I pulled it out, and I dusted it off, and I focused it all on what kind of company we're going to be, the restaurant business. And I said, I'm going to use this leadership program to go out and start teaching our people, what kind of company we're going to be, what our values are, and also get their input. Really follow Jack Welch's guidance. So the first program I did was in London. In 1997, I did it with 8 general managers from our European business. I spent 3 full days with them. And I found out everything Jack Welch told me. They were starved for what our company was going to be like. They wanted to know what I was all about. They wanted to provide me their input. It was the best 3 days I could have possibly spent. But then I realized I'd spent 3 days with 8 people. And at that point, we had 700,000 people in our company. So I had a lot more people to reach. So then I started teaching this program to 50 people. And then I've done it with over 100 people. One of the most exciting things in my career, I was in Shanghai teaching 120 Chinese executives how to take people with you, basically Western principles in a very hierarchical country. I did it with 120 Chinese executives. It was phenomenal. Prior to that, I'd done it in Europe with 100 executives in Germany. But it's just, I've been doing this all over the world as many as 8 times a year. And guess what? After all these years, 15 years, I've literally reached 4,000 people.
Now, people ask me, how can I spend so much time on this? Why do you do this? And first of all, our formula for success, and I guarantee it's the formula for success in every one of the churches that you build, is that you've got to, first of all, build the capability of your people. Then you're going to bring more people into your congregation. Well, that for us, we're going to attract more customers. And then we're going to make more money. That's what you do in business. But the real important thing is that you got to recognize the formula for success is not the outcome. It's how you get there. And you get there through people who can bring people into your business or into your church and make your church thrive or make your business thrive. And I always say, show me a good business and I'll show you a good leader. I've never seen it work otherwise. If you're going to build a great church, you got to be a great leader. If you're going to build a great business, you got to be a great leader. It doesn't happen without leadership. So I make developing leaders my number one priority. Plus, when people come to my leadership program, I have them come in with the single biggest thing that they're working on that will have the biggest impact on their business. And what they do, I always ask them, because people always ask me even today, how could you spend so much time on leadership? And then I say, well, listen, there's 50 people in the room here. If all of you get your single biggest thing that you're working on in Yum Brands that'll have the biggest impact in terms of growing the business, if you can make that happen, do you think our company will grow? And they all say yes. And by the time the 2.5 to 3 day program is over, they walk out with an action plan that will go out and drive, help them get what they're working on done in our company. And if they get it done, then guess what? You know, we grow. So to me, this is the absolute most efficient time that I have. You know, spending time with leaders, sharing with them everything that I know, and helping them develop a plan on how they can be more effective as they go forward in terms of driving growth in our company. Now, you might ask, why did you take the time to write this book called Taking People With You? Well, as I mentioned, we have 1.4 million people now in our company, not the 700,000. We're now in 120 countries around the world, and I've only reached 4,000 people. I got a long ways to go. So what we're doing is we're doing a global cascade of the principles in the Taking People With You book. It's being translated in 8 different languages. We have training guides, and we're training all of our 38,000 restaurant managers around the world on how to take people with them to drive results in their piece of Yum. The other reason why I'm really passionate about writing the book is that all the proceeds from the book go to the World Food Program. And the United Nations World Food Program is our corporate social responsibility effort. We've been doing it for 6 years. I'm pleased to say we've raised over $120 million and used our restaurants to drive awareness of the hunger issue all around the world. And I'm also pleased to say that this book and the speaking engagements that I'm going to do, we will raise, I'm hoping, well over $2 million as we go forward. And by the way, that gets some applause most places where I speak, okay? It's just a real privilege to do it. And the other reason why I'm really passionate about doing this is that I'm passionate about leadership. There's nothing that I love more than leadership. There's nothing that turns me on more than seeing some person that's young, vibrant, can't wait to attack the world, and there's nothing that I'd rather do than to give what I've learned to others. And as a CEO, I've had exposure to so many experts in so many different fields. For me to keep that to myself, I think, would be selfish. So I love passing the learnings on. So when Roger Enrico, he asked me to develop this leadership seminar, it forced me to really think about, how do I lead? What do I do? Well, you should know that I'm a marketer at heart. I grew up in marketing and advertising, and what I concluded was my secret was is I was naturally using my marketing skills to build teams and to take people with me. Now, let me explain. In marketing, I always ask the question, what perceptions, habits, and beliefs do I need to change, build, or reinforce to grow the business? And I've always found when I answer that question and develop a real plan to go up against it, then we always get great results. One of the things that I've learned over time is that customers in our business are not very good at telling you what they want, but they're very good at complaining. So if you get customers in a room and you ask them to tell you everything that's wrong with your brand and everything that's wrong with the category, they're going to bring forward all kinds of problems. And if you can solve the biggest problem that occurs most frequently, that's most important to customers, then you're going to absolutely grow your business. You know, and so let me give you an example of how this works. At Taco Bell, we found out the single biggest problem that occurs most frequently when we were having trouble with our business about 10 years ago was that our products aren't easy to eat. They're very messy. And 70% of our business goes through the drive-thru. So if 70% of your business is being eaten in the car and it's messy and it's not easy to eat, that's a big problem. So we went back and we were struggling. We developed some very good products. We had a quesadilla. I'm sure you've all had Mexican quesadillas. And we had a grilled stuffed burrito. And we'd introduced them. We said, Taco Bell has a new quesadilla. It tastes good. Come try it. It's good. We had zero sales growth. We had this grilled burrito. Same thing. Great tasting burrito. Come try it. It's good. Well, we went back and took those exact same products. And we went to Amazon, we hired Jeff Bezos, okay? We had 10 of his like high-tech people in a lab sitting around, and they were buzzing about the hottest new handheld on the market. And it wasn't like a BlackBerry or anything. It was Taco Bell's new quesadilla, okay? It was portable, easy to eat, a handheld. And guess what? We marketed it, and we're up 13% just by becoming relevant. Then we took that same grilled stuffed burrito and positioned it and called it a heavy-duty portable. People would eat the burrito in the car, and the car would just turn up this way because it was so heavy, okay? And then we went out, and how many of you have ever tried a Crunchwrap at Taco Bell? Okay, great. I love you. You're great people. You're fantastic, okay? We created a product designed for portability, and we positioned it as good to go. It was a new product of the year in food service that year. And we totally turned around Taco Bell, and we all of a sudden said, think outside the bun at Taco Bell, and all of a sudden, you know, our business started booming. So this really worked. You know, when I think back, why was it that I really enjoyed Southeast Christian Church? What really first got me into Southeast? Well, you know, my perception was that church was pretty boring, okay? I was going to go there, sit there, yawn, sing hymns that I couldn't really stand and couldn't wait to get out, okay? I'm being honest with you, okay? Well, all of a sudden, I walk into Southeast Christian Church. Everybody meets me there. Everybody's friendly. You know, they didn't have first-time parking passes. I'm parking spots. I really liked that because I was a first-timer then, okay? I go in, I sing. Gosh, I didn't know I could sing so well. And I knew, you know, they had music that I really liked. You know, and it wasn't these hymns that I thought were terrible. And then all of a sudden, a minister, a leader, like Bob Russell, starts giving me the word in pragmatic, practical, common sense language, and it fits into my life. And I say, hey, there might be something here. So whether Southeast used my marketing formula, what perceptions, habits, beliefs you have to change, build, or reinforce, they were doing it in their own way. Whether they want to say they're a marketing company or not, I think Southeast is one of the best marketers in the history of the world because they bring people to Jesus by making Jesus approachable when so many people see it so far away. And so I think, you know, but they used that skill. So when it comes to leading people, I always ask myself the same question. What perceptions, habits, or beliefs do I have to change, build, or reinforce to take people with me and to grow our business? And in your case, to bring people to Jesus and to really create more disciples. You really got to get inside of the heads of the people that you lead. So the big insight here is to think about your people and the people you have to take with you, whether it's your church, it's the elders, it's unbelievers, but think about the people who you want to impact, just like a marketer does when he thinks about the target audience that they have for their products, or a salesman has for the customers that he wants to sell their people on. Get inside their heads and be relevant. Now, this sounds like a lot of common sense, but one of the things I'll tell you about common sense, I've learned over time that it's just not that common. You know, but if you're going to take people with you, you got to understand who you're really talking to and get inside of their heads. Here's my favorite example of how I put this to work. And it's based on, I think, the most pivotal story in my life. The single biggest high-impact thing that happened in my life. When I was running operations at Pepsi, I used to go out and do these roundtables. And I would meet with like 10 people on the front line and ask them what's working, what wasn't working. So I go to St. Louis, Missouri, and I'm having coffee and donuts with a group of 10 route salesmen. These are the guys that drive the trucks and deliver the products. And I ask them, tell me about merchandising, because the merchandising is very important to Pepsi. It's where you have your facings of the Pepsi's all got the label lined up properly, and you got lots of space in the stores, and that's what the salespeople are really geared towards doing. And they all started talking about this guy named Bob who was sitting at the end of the table. And they're saying, you know, Bob's the best merchandiser I have ever seen. He took me out, and in one day, he showed me more in one day than I learned my first 4 years at Pepsi-Cola Company. Everybody started raving about this guy named Bob, talking about how great he was. And I look down at the end of the table, and there's Bob, and he's crying. And I say, Bob, what are you crying? These people are just raving about you. They think you're great. Why are you crying? He said, you know, I've been in this company for 47 years. I'm retiring in 2 weeks, and I didn't know people felt this way about me. And I said to myself, if I ever have a chance to be a president of a company, I'm going to find some powerful way to make recognition the biggest behavior, the biggest value that I can use to have fun in an organization and drive the behaviors and recognize the behaviors that really move our business. And I thought about Bob. I thought about Bob, and I thought, man, this guy was so good at what he did. He didn't feel appreciated. How sad is that? And just think, if people would have really recognized how good he was, he could have even had an even bigger job and affected more people in a more powerful way. And I didn't want any Bobs in the company that I have the privilege of leading. You know, and just as an aside, I was watching 60 Minutes. I always tape 60 Minutes. I was watching it. And they had this guy on in the small town in the Northeast, and he was a jack of all trades. And people loved him in this town. And he had Lou Gehrig's disease. And Lou Gehrig's disease, you know, it's a terrible, painful death. And he's being interviewed. And this guy was loved in the town because he did everything for everybody. And he says, he can barely hear what he says. He says, you know, I'm so glad I'm dying a slow death. And the interviewer said, why? Why? How could you say something like that? And he says, because I get to find out now what everybody thinks about me, how much they care about me, how much they love me. And I think that's another powerful story of why recognition is so valued. You know, you think about it. Think about the people that could die tomorrow that you haven't taken the time to tell them how special they are. He had that joy through a slow death to at least hear what other people never hear. Never hear. Well, shortly thereafter, you know, I said, God's always working in my life. I got to be president of KFC. And I said, I'm going to break through the clutter on recognition, and I'm going to have so much fun. Now, I also knew what the situation was like at KFC. And Joanne Plitka is the old Joanne Plitka. I'm sorry, Joanne. But Ken, you know what I mean. Okay. She was in our KFC at the time, but KFC had not made plan for about 8 years in PepsiCo profit plan. Sales were down, morale was down. You know, PepsiCo executives were perceived as real formal, more aloof. You know, I can't even get out of bed with my shirt tail being out. You know, it's like that's just I don't even know why I have this on. Someone told me I had to wear a suit. Okay, but bottom line is that you know here you know I was a different kind of person. And I wanted to be authentic, and I wanted to say things are going to change, and I wanted to have some fun. So I needed a recognition award. So I'm going to show you what I did. Okay? Now, most presidents' perception habits are they're very formal. They give away plaques, and they give away, clocks. I gave away this. I gave away this rubber chicken. Okay? And what I did is I number every one of them, because everyone is important. I would write on, gee, Joanne, you did a great job. You're doing a great job creating that pot pie at KFC. Thank you for bringing that delicious product to us. Way to go. And then I'll say, you know what? I'm going to send this to you, and I'm going to send you a picture. We're going to take a picture. I'm going to give you a picture so you have it. But more importantly, in my mind anyways, I'm going to put your picture in my office because I'm going to celebrate your achievements. Well, I started giving away these floppy chickens. People started crying when I gave away these floppy chickens. Now, I also gave away $100 because you can't eat a rubber chicken. Okay, they like that too, okay? But it was the rubber chicken. You know, when you give it to a chef who's been there for 20 years cooking our original recipe and he gets this and from the president of the company, I'm telling you, it's a big deal. So then I got to be president of Pizza Hut. What am I gonna do? I had to come up with something new. So I came up with this. I give one of these cheese heads, I ride on it, you know, and you know, people cried there too. I mean, it was unbelievable. Then I got to be the head of this company, Yum Brands, so I needed to have a real big award. And we really are focused on customers. I want to catch people walking the talk on behalf of our customers, okay? So I give away this. The battery goes like this, okay? I give away $300 now because we have three brands, but I number them, I put them up on. And let me tell you something. If you walk into, now I'm going to brag a little bit, Dr. Mueller, okay? I apologize for this, okay? I have the greatest corporate office in the history of the world, okay? If you walk into my office, from the floor to the ceiling are people that I've recognized all around the world. And then people said, hey, David, what are you going to do when you run out of wall space? I said, I'm going to put them on the ceiling. So now I give away this and say, you know, I'm going to put that picture up on the ceiling. I'm going to be looking up for you every day, okay? And you know what? You walk in, it says what our business is all about. People capability first, recognition. Everybody wants to see the CEO's office, the shadow of the leader. Now, the important thing is, this isn't just recognition that I do now. Everybody does it in our company. I'm going to show you some other examples. This is a sauce packet. This is what the president of Taco Bell, CEO, he gives away the sauce packet. He writes on it. This is a You Can Award, okay, that a regional coach does down in Florida for us, okay? Now, I love this one. In Thailand and Asia, they love to gamble, okay? So the head of our Thailand business gives away a deck of cards. He's the king on the card, okay? He took himself a little bit too seriously, and he now works for McDonald's, but at least we got him, you know, we got him thinking in the right direction here, okay? It's amazing how this has taken over, okay? Now, people told me, they said, David, this isn't going to work everywhere. You know, in China, it's very hierarchical, it's top down, brother number one, you know, that's the only person that talks is the leader. In England, they're very stuffy and formal, they won't like it, you know. Well, let me tell you something. We had Shirley Kunimoto, who is in our restaurant excellence group here in Louisville. She goes over to China, and she goes to Ying Ling's restaurant, who's a restaurant general manager, and she says, hey, I understand that David Novak gave you a Yum Award. And she said, yes, he did. And she said, can I see it? And she said, no, you can't see it. And she said, well, why won't you show it to me? And she says, it's at home, locked up, and my father's safe. This meant so much to her. She took it home to her family. It was one of her most prized possessions. To me, this is the soft stuff that drives the hard results. Nobody in business can quantify what this kind of stuff does, but it's the soft stuff that drives hard results. And there's two reasons why people will leave. There's two reasons why people will leave a business. There's two reasons why people will stop working with you or leave your church. Number one, if they work for you and they don't feel appreciated, they'll leave. This has been quantified by lots of different companies. The other reason why they leave is they don't get along with their boss. That's why we create coaches. We got rid of like director titles and manager titles, and we call people area coaches and market coaches and chief operating coaches, and you know, but we really focus on creating coaches. If you view yourself as a boss in today's world, you are living in 1950 land. Sorry, Bob, that's probably right in your prime, wasn't it? You know, but anyway, you know, you are living like, you are so yesterday, it's unbelievable. Boss is an archaic term. Coaches is what it's all about. Now, Jesus was a big-time coach. Think about it. Think about Jesus. He set the mission, then he invested every part of himself, even his life, to get people to follow it. He was a huge coach. Now, I have to tell you personally, I have to watch my ego and my power drive. I love to be in charge. I love to have power. I love to be up here on stage. It would bother me if somebody else was giving the speech and I was watching. I love it. I mean, I'm being honest with you. I continually, what is that thing about ego? Edge got out. Believe me, if there's a guy who does that, I do it. I have to watch it all the time. But God just won't leave me alone. He won't leave me alone. No matter what I do, he's always there for me. He always comes back in. If I just let him in, he's always there. He's always there for more. And he's the best coach I have when I use him. And I love the Psalms verse where I will instruct you and teach you in each way you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. And that's how I feel, how God has been, how Jesus has been with me. He won't let me go. I just have to look for him and look for what he can bring to me. And then, you know, Bob Russell, who is my, I think, a great accountability partner for me. And, you know, I've had lots of recognition heaped on me. And he's an accountability partner. And he sent me a great verse to remember when you're on the mountaintop, when you think you've really arrived and your ego can start to creep in. And that verse is, what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. That's a phenomenal message for I think all of us. So I'd like to humbly offer up a few coaching tips that you can start using right now to make big things happen in your world as you pursue your life objectives. In the book, I write about how you have to have the right mindset. You got to start out with the right mindset. Then you have to have a real plan for taking people with you. Then you have to follow through to get results. Let's focus first on just the mindset. The best leaders I know go to work every day, focus on being your best self. And I think as a leader, you need to start right now building your self-awareness. How do you impact people? You know, what are your strengths? What are your areas of growth? What are your areas of opportunity? And the best way to do that is to ask people. Ask people, you know, how you're doing. What are your strengths? What do you think I could do even better at? Ask people for feedback and you'll get the gift of feedback. But great leaders have great self-awareness. They want to get better, so they ask people's help. They open themselves up. They tell people they're vulnerable. They ask people for help. Every year, I do what I call a 3x5 exercise. I write down in January, you know, what do I appreciate about myself as a leader today, and how can I be even more effective? Then what I do is I send it to our top 20 executives and say, help me. This is what I'm working on. I need your help. It's very, very powerful, but it forces you to think about how you can be a better leader. Now, for example, you might not be able to tell us, but I'm fairly passionate. Okay? Now, passion is a great thing, but you know what I can do? I can scare the heck out of people. I can intimidate people like you can't believe. Okay? And so I tell people, I know that. You know, listen, when I'm getting all excited about where we want to go and what we want to do, and you don't agree with me, you know, take me on. I need you to take me on. Please take me on. Save me from myself. But I ask for help on that dimension. The other thing on self-awareness is you have to know how others see you. Like when I was working in PepsiCo, I was known for being a pretty good marketing guy. People thought I was a great marketing guy. I wanted to be a division president. I wanted to run a company, not just be a marketing guy. But the head of PepsiCo at the time was Wayne Calloway. And I went to him, told him I want to run a company. He says, David, you're a great marketing guy. I said, I want to run a company. He says, David, you're a great marketing guy, okay? And I knew that he said, you want to be president? I'll make you president of marketing. I said, no, I really want to lead people. I want to be in charge of the whole thing. And he said, you're a great marketing guy. And so there was an opening that came up in operations at Pepsi where I went to my boss and said, listen, give me a chance to do this job. If I don't do a good job in 6 months, you can put me back into the marketing and I'll go be president of marketing or whatever. But give me a chance. And if you give me a chance, I know I can show you that I can really do this.
And he said, okay. And then I convinced Wayne Calloway to give me this chance. And I became the chief operating officer of Pepsi-Cola Company. And then that's how I got to be the president of KFC. That opened up the doors because all of a sudden I wasn't just this airy-fairy marketing guy that came up with ideas. I could go into plants, listen to people, develop processes, figure out how to really solve problems that were more nitty-gritty with the front line. And so I got a shot at it, and that led to where I am today. So you got to know how other people see it. Then the other thing is, take advantage of your self-awareness. There's this one exercise I love, and if there's one exercise I hope you take with you forever, okay, is this one. It's called Hotshot Replaces Me. If you go into a church and you're working, or you're building a church and you're working it, and you say to yourself, now, if a hotshot, somebody who's really good at what they did, came in and took my job, and they took my job tomorrow, what would they do? What would they find that needs to be done? If you're really self-aware, you know what that is. It'll force you to think about what you haven't done as the leader in that particular situation. And since I love my job, I do it before that hotshot comes in. So I think, what would that hotshot do? Well, for us, I know that they'd be much more focused on operations than we've been in our first 15 years. I know that they'd look at McDonald's and say that McDonald's has done a lot better job getting more sales out of their asset and restaurant than we have. And they might look at our culture and say, can you get even a little bit more edge and sense of urgency into it? So those are three things that I started doing because I thought about what that hotshot would do. So constantly be looking at yourself and say, how can you raise your game? How can you take it to your next to the next level? Now, being your best self means walking the talk. You know, you can say whatever you want, but what you do is really the message that you provide. And when you think about it, when you think about it hard, you know, you got to realize, and I'm sure you do, that God has given you a uniqueness and an authenticity that you can use to really honor him. You know, every year I go see Warren Buffett. He's a great guy. He loves Kentucky Fried Chicken, by the way. He's the only guy I know that takes original recipe and puts extra salt on it, you know, but he's a phenomenal guy, okay? But I asked him once, I said, what do you look for when you look for in leaders? And he says, you know, I look for a leader who's in love with this painting, but it's not finished yet. And I thought, gosh, that's just a great analogy, you know, because, you know, if you love something, you're passionate about it, and you're not finished with it, and you want to keep making it as great as you can be. And then I thought about paintings. What's the greatest paintings of all? The greatest painting of all is a masterpiece. Why? It's one of a kind. There's nothing like it. And you know what's really amazing? If we go around this room here, God has made each and every one of us individually unique. There isn't one person in this room who has the same DNA. And I think it's our job to be our best self so that we can really create a masterpiece, the best possible masterpiece that we can create that truly honors God. So being your best self, working on that masterpiece throughout your career is the challenge. Constantly thinking about how you can make that painting better is the challenge. Next, with your mindset, you got to be a know-how junkie, I call it, and wipe out not invented here. You know, I guarantee you, if we went around the room and we took an IQ test here, I only have an average IQ. I bet I've never taken the test, but my wife tells me all the time I'm not that smart, okay? But one of the things I am is I'm an all-world learner. I don't care where the idea comes, I'll take it and think about how I can apply it to our business. Some of the best ideas that I've come up with have come from other places. You know, when I was with Frito-Lay, I went to the salad dressing aisle, and I found out that the fastest growing flavor in salad dressing was ranch dressing, and then I went to Frito-Lay and the management there, and I recommended that we develop ranch-flavored Doritos, and that's Cool Ranch Doritos, which is one of the most popular products and biggest packaged goods brands in the world. When I was at Pizza Hut, I went to California Pizza Kitchen. That's a very popular concept. They have barbecue chicken pizza, Thai chicken pizza, bacon BLT pizza, all these individual flavors. And I went back, took my team there. We ate all their products and sat there, how could we do that at Pizza Hut? And we said, well, we don't have all these exotic toppings as ingredients, but we do have pepperoni. So how do we make a special pepperoni pizza? Well, let's double the amount of pepperonis and call it Pepperoni Lovers. 12% same-store sales growth.
We say, oh, that works. How about putting some different meats together? Meat lovers. Whoa, same thing. Cheese lovers. Veggie lovers. And that came from California Pizza Kitchen. It wasn't exactly their idea, but I got a germ of an idea and did what I call pattern thinking and then transferred it into our business. So, you know, look for ideas wherever you can find them. Then I think as a real true leader, you got to be humble enough to celebrate and love other people's ideas more than your own. I had this one guy who I would characterize as the boss. I worked for him. I'd come in on Monday morning, I'd be all excited and say, you know, I was thinking that we ought to go out and create this kind of product or this kind of product. You know, he says, you know, while I was shaving today, I was thinking the very same thing. Next day I come in, I say, hey, you know, what if we do this or that? And he says, you know what, when I was driving into work today, I was thinking the same thing. I said, man, this guy has a connection with the Lord. He is always thinking what I'm thinking. But it was a joke. You know, it's like he just had such a hard time giving anybody credit for any idea. And it was such a sapper. We used to go over and we'd get Pepsi or coffee or whatever. And somebody'd say, I have an idea. And somebody'd say, I was thinking the same thing. And I went to him. And I think one of the things you do as a leader is you help make your boss better. So I went to him. I said, do you realize you do this? And you know what? He stopped thinking the same thing. And he became a better leader. So, you know, you got to celebrate other people's ideas, and you also got to help your boss be a better boss. That works, believe me. If you can help somebody be better, they'll do a lot more for you. Now, let me tell you what happens when you don't do this, and you don't wipe out, not a minute here. When I went to Pepsi, I went from the head of marketing to run marketing sales for Pepsi. I went in there, the business was not doing well, and I had to come up with a great idea. I knew that we had to turn this business around. And I looked around, and everything in the industry that was going on was clear. Clearly Canadian, water, all these clear products were just like taking off. They were just doing fantastic. So I'm sitting in my office, and gee, these clear products, they're really something else. What if we create a clear Pepsi? Wow. What a great idea. I got to be the smartest guy in the history of the world, okay? So I call up my boss, and I say, I got this idea. He says, well, check it out. That sounds like a good idea. So I go, and we do what we call focus groups. We present it to customers. They love the idea. They think this is the greatest idea since peanut butter. So we immediately take it into Denver, Colorado, put it into test market, and it was the lead story on the CBS News when the bottles first rolled off the bottling plant. And it said, Dan Rather says, today in Denver, Colorado, Pepsi-Cola Company introduced a clear Pepsi called Crystal Pepsi. Well, this was like a rage. People were trying to get these products from all over the country. They were trying to get it mailed to them. Everyone wanted to try Crystal Pepsi. So now I got to go back to our bottlers, the Pepsi bottlers, and tell them about Crystal Pepsi. And these are the guys who basically own the trucks and sell our products. And they say, David, that is a great idea you came up with. I said, yeah, I know, it's great. And they said, there's only one problem. I said, what's that? He said, it doesn't taste enough like Pepsi. And I said, well, we don't want it to taste like Pepsi because we want to get an incremental user and we want to broaden our franchise and we want to have a different tasting cola that will bring in more incremental volume. And they said, yeah, but you're calling it Crystal Pepsi and it doesn't taste like Pepsi. And I said, well, we don't want it to taste like Pepsi. We want incremental volume. And they go, yeah, but it does taste like Pepsi. And I said, yeah, but I didn't care what they had to say. I was a heat-seeking missile. We were going to launch that product. We were going to launch it on the Super Bowl, and we were going national. I didn't care what they had to say, okay? Because they just didn't get what I got. They just didn't get it, okay? And so we launched a product. Now, this was the first product in the history of Pepsi-Cola Company that was ever launched at a premium price. And the bottlers priced it premium. Now, that's terrible in the soft drink industry because pricing needs to be very low because the grocery stores use the beverage pricing to bring traffic in, okay? You know, they call them the loss leader products, basically, okay? So we introduced it. They introduced it at a premium price. I was so upset about it. I said, why are you doing this at a premium price? And they said, we're doing this because we know it's not going to be around that long. And they wanted to make money. And guess what? It wasn't around that long. And guess why? Didn't taste enough like Pepsi. This actually shows you what could happen in business. In the year that I test marketed it, it was the top innovation of the year. After it became a failure, Time magazine put it in the top 10 of the worst marketing failures of the last century, okay? And Saturday Night Live did a parody on it where they took this Pepsi, clear Pepsi bottle, and they showed gravy coming out of the bottle, okay? That was me, okay? And somehow I'm up here. I don't understand it, but that's what I, you know, but that happened. But the problem was, is I didn't learn. I didn't listen. I didn't want to hear anything about my idea. I wiped out not invented, you know, I didn't wipe out not invented here. I didn't take advantage of their knowledge or their instincts. And that learning had a major impact on me because when I went to KFC, I worked with franchisees, and our franchisees actually developed Crispy Strips, which was our most popular product, which really turned the business around, and we literally grew the business, and it was a career maker for me. So the question I would pose to you is, where can you go get knowledge and input and know-how that will help you come up with ideas that will help you further your career and advance the cause? The other thing on mindset is that leaders have to have the mindset to unleash the power of people. You know, that's your job. And that means you got to go to work every day assuming that 99.9% of all the people in the world want to do good and want to be a part of something bigger. Too many people just don't trust people. You know what? I've never trusted anybody that didn't trust me. I've never liked anybody that didn't like me. And you know, when you're the leader, you got to give more than the other person. It's not, life is rarely, rarely like you're on this teeter-totter and everything equals out. I think you're a great leader, you give more. You don't care if you're pulling more of the weight. You give more on trust. You give more on like. You open yourself up and then you reap the rewards from that later. So, you know, I think you got to recognize that people really want to be good and recognize that everyone counts. John Wooden, I interviewed for my leadership program, and John Wooden said, let me tell you something. He said, everyone counts. He said, Lew Alcindor was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He was the engine, but I'll tell you what, somebody else was over here was a spoke on the wheel. And if that spoke goes down, the team goes down. So everybody counts. And when you don't think you're needed, you're through. Now, I realize that I'm actually going over here, but I was told, because this is a Baptist-affiliated church, that you're used to this, okay? But I'm not used to this. I added some stuff, I think, in terms of my personal journey here, okay? And there's a lot more powerful things that I could talk about, and I just think you're going to have to go read the book, okay? And read the book, and what I do tell you is that if you read that book, there's no way you're not going to come up with some insights that's going to help you here at school, help you in your life, and help you develop a plan that can take people with you. But I am going to tell you two stories, and then I'll let you go back to class. By the way, I understand everybody's smiling right now. You know, the weather's beautiful. You only been here for 2 weeks, okay? It's the early days, so there's no tests to really stress over. So it's great. And, you know, I want to just give you a couple things that I think are things that you can really think about that you'll remember and you can take into the world and really impact so many people, make a difference in their lives. And I'm going to give you two stories, one a leadership story and just one of a story I heard at Southeast that I've kind of stolen. But since I'm here in this church-like environment, I'm going to give credit to Mick Bro, I think, who told me this story. But I actually witnessed it in Indonesia, okay? When I was at Pepsi, we had a lot of celebrities. One of the celebrities we had was Magic Johnson. And Magic Johnson announced that he was HIV positive. When I first came to Pepsi. And he was very concerned. He wondered whether we would keep him or not. You know, wondered whether we would drop him. As a celebrity, people were already dropping him. So I met, you know, with Craig Weatherup, who was the CEO of Pepsi, and we met together, and we said, we're going to back him, and we're going to stick with him. So he didn't know that, but we went to have dinner in New York. We go to the Plaza Hotel. I meet Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson is like one of the most majestic guys I've ever met. Smile. That's so big, you know, he's just in person, he's the most charismatic guy I've ever met in my life. We quickly told him we were going to back him. We'd already developed a promotion idea for the summer that we were going to use with him. We Believe in Magic was the idea. And so he was very happy. And so we started talking about life. And I said, can you tell me, what was it like when you were growing up? What was it like when you were growing up as a kid? My gosh, you had to be such a great athlete. How did you handle
Dean's so much better than everybody else. He said, well, let me tell you something. When I was a kid, we'd play Little League basketball or youth basketball. We'd win 80 to 20. I'd score 65 points. And when the game was over, everybody was mad at me. Parents were mad at me. My kids' teammates were mad at me. Nobody was happy. And it's because they weren't getting involved in the game. And so I went back and, you know, I thought about this and I decided I was going to start passing the ball. And so I started passing the ball and now we win 70 to 40. I score 25 points. Everybody else scores about 10 points. And at the end of the game, everybody's happy. Everybody's happy. They feel involved. They're committed. So then I made the decision that I was going to be the best passer to ever play the game. I was going to pass like you couldn't believe. I was going to get my teammates involved. I went to the Lakers. I told Byron Scott, I'm going to make you an all-star by passing you the ball. James Worthy, you're going to go in the Hall of Fame. You know, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you're going to be the greatest scorer in NBA history. And so I started passing them the ball. And all of those things came true. And I remember passing the ball to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And he scored the 2 points that made him the leading scorer in history. He comes up, he picks me up, grabs me, throws me up in the air and says, Magic, you told me you were going to do it. He said, that was one of the greatest moments in my life. And when I think about that story, what you hear is a person who really, really gets the joy of going from me to we. He was still a guy that could take over a game. I remember when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar got hurt in the playoffs, he played, he scored 42 points, he made hook shots, he played the center role, never did that. He could make all the points himself, or he could make most of them, but he learned the joy of bringing the team with him and going from me to we. That's what I think all of us need to do. And as you think about your life, the story that I heard at Southeast, in which I witnessed in Indonesia, the exact same thing as this one. I'm out on a Sunday, I'm traveling to Indonesia, and I'm like reading the paper, and I'm watching just the surroundings are going on. There's this woman who wants to get into the pool, okay? Have you ever seen somebody get into the pool when they are tiptoeing in and it's a little cold and they shiver all the way down and they go all the way, and it's like a painful experience, okay? She's going through this, okay? And it's just funny, watch her. And then there's this little kid that comes in, people are reading her paper, comes in and absolutely jumps in the middle of the pool, does this big cannonball, and literally just with unabashed joy creates these ripples that go over the poolside. A couple of newspapers got wet. It was unbelievable. And I think when you think about what you're doing here, what you're going to be doing in your life, you can tip your toes into the water. You could tip your toes in the water and you can get there and you'll ultimately get wet, okay? Or you can really create some ripples. You can jump in that pool and be a ripple maker. And I think I would only tell you the self-sacrifice, the humility, the commitment that you're making by serving God is just absolutely amazing. You've made such a big commitment. You've made such a tremendous decision that can impact and change the world and change lives more than any other vocation that you could really go into. And my only encouragement to you is to be you. You become that masterpiece. You know, don't stick your toe in the water. Jump in that pool and truly you made the decision. Now become great at it. Be a ripple maker. Bring people to Jesus Christ and live like Jesus. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.